All right, welcome, welcome, welcome everyone, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone in between. This is Tony's Political Ramblings, episode 14. I realize that intro is going to rhyme until episode 19, which makes me very happy. But anyway, I wanted to get into today's topic, which is going to be, I'm calling it reimagining transportation. And obviously this is going to be in the context of the United States. And so I'm just going to go over a little bit of a history on how we got to where we are today in terms of transportation, where that is, where transportation is in some other countries of note, and my pitch for how we should move forward. So today, obviously, we're a very car-dependent society. People drive their cars all over the place, from home to work and back, around town, from city to city, across the country, if they're feeling so inclined. So it's a very car-dependent town that we lived in, or country. But it wasn't always that way. Obviously, before cars, the only way people got around was by rail. And even after the invention of the car and a little bit of the of its rollout, public transit and streetcars, trolleys were still very popular in a lot of U.S. cities. You had people riding them all over the place, and you had this situation where the companies and things who built these streetcars signed contracts with the cities that they were in that were really advantageous and generous to the cities, because they thought, oh well, we've got a great market, we've got a sort of monopoly here, we're good. That was the case until cars really started rolling out in the cities. And the problem was that a lot of the streetcars use the same lanes as normal cars would. So you'd have a lot of backup. You had a lot of people sitting on streetcars, sitting behind normal cars on the streets, and it was just very inconvenient. And as I mentioned before, the contracts that were between the cities and these companies that built the streetcars and the trolleys were not very good for the companies themselves. So a lot of them, in conjunction with the gridlock and people buying cars instead, because people have their reasons. But when people started buying cars and everything, and people stopped taking transit because they kept getting gridlock, and what people were left, it was not covering the costs because the contracts were so poor. A lot of these companies went under. And after that, I believe it was the National Line Company. I'm not sure on that, but it was a company owned by GM, went out and bought out a lot of the streetcars and the infrastructure, and they impounded them. They basically got rid of them and created more room for streets and for roads and cars and things. And so really public transportation within cities fell apart like that. And obviously when you had the, in the 1950s and 60s, when you had the national interstate system that was put into place by Eisenhower, it was great because it connected. It was a big infrastructure project that connected the whole country by means of the automobile. And that worked. It did, you know, and you can still, to this day, get around the country by car very easily, you know, if you're willing to make the trip, of course. And then so obviously that compounded with a lot of white flight into the suburbs, and these suburbs that were basically designed around the car, you have this real dependence forming on the automobile. And so the U.S. is kind of an outlier in terms of a lot of developed countries. Many European nations have very strong train networks that can carry them from one end of the country to the other without any problem. The UK is a great example. You can get from Edinburgh as far north in Scotland, and you can go all the way down to Newcastle by just switching some train lines along the way, and it doesn't take too terribly long to get there. In Japan, I mean, obviously, Japan is almost borderline known for its high-speed rail and its train systems, and it's so ridiculously efficient that, again, you can get from one end of the island to the other, or one of the islands to another. It's very easy system out there. And so why this gets a lot of pushback in the U.S. is, A, it's expensive. It costs a lot of money up front, especially on the government, and that means higher tax rates. B, it cuts into the auto industry, and by virtue of that, the oil and gas industry, fossil fuels, all that, because they power the cars. And C, it cuts into the airline industry. A lot of airlines make their money off of regional flights, which would be sort of eradicated if you were able to take a train. Not entirely eradicated, but it would greatly be reduced if, instead of having to take a flight from Atlanta to Miami, you could take a train from Atlanta to Miami. You would most likely go with the train, unless you were in a big hurry. So it would really cut into regional flights. And maybe not even Atlanta to Miami. We'll just say Miami to Orlando. That sort of flight that, you know, we'll just say Miami to Atlanta. That's a good distance. You know, that's something that you could conceivably take on a train if we were in somewhere like the UK, somewhere like Germany. And so my pitch is that within cities and without cities, we start putting more rail lines in place. And I'm going to borrow a book from the UK's, a page from the UK's playbook, actually, here. When the United Kingdom's rail system was initially put in place, it was all government-owned, government-funded, et cetera, et cetera. But after a while, it was deregulated. It was privatized, and that way a lot of private sector companies could get involved, making the trains, operating the trains, providing service on the trains, things of that nature. And so in my pitch is that you could do the same thing out here. Not to the point where they are building where like one private company is awarded a contract and they're building the whole thing. You know, that's sort of the case that you get with a toll road, and that's not exactly ideal. But you could have competing rail lines just as we have competing airlines, as we have right now. And again, you could honestly even incentivize some of the airlines that are popular here in the U.S. to actually get in on the game of making trains and sort of having that take the place of regional flights. So that way, A, you reduce the burden on the taxpayer, so they don't have to pay for the trains to be made, and they don't have to pay for service on the trains and how maintaining the trains and things like that. And that could be handled by a private company. But you could still have that public infrastructure in place so that you would not have to be reliant on cars to get from Atlanta to Miami, or Atlanta to Orlando, or Atlanta to Jacksonville. I don't know why I picked the Southeast for this, but that's just where my head was at this morning, I suppose. But this could all be kept in check and regulated the same way the airline industry is with the FAA. You know, that would allow for competition between private actors to take place here on the rail lines, but it would also make sure that there would be no gouging, price gouging or any sort of inferior service or dipping below standards set forth by the government. And this would just, it would just create an environment that would be better suited for not only individuals' health, because typically in cities and things like that where there is more public transportation and less driving, people are in better shape. Surprise, surprise, because you have to walk and take trains to places instead of just sit in your car for 40 minutes and drive. It's better for the environment. A lot of these trains are not as reliant on fossil fuels as cars are. And especially when you get to planes, these regional flights, if you cut a lot of those out and replace them with clean operating trains, again, you really reduce the impact on the environment. So, you know, the only real drawback to this sort of plan is that, it would cost a lot of money up front to build, but that cost would be mitigated by the influence and by the participation of private sector actors along the way. So that's my pitch for reimagining transportation. I think it's a fair plan, and obviously it's a very broad sketch, and a lot of the details would need to be filled in, you know, by actual government officials. But this is just me spitballing, which is, I believe it's actually the whole point of this podcast. So there you go.